The following is a paid commercial program. The views, opinions, and advice presented are that of the host and guests and do not represent guarantees of results or represent the opinions of the staff and management of Real Country 920 WGHQ, 1260 WBNR, 1420 WLNA, or Pamel Broadcasting. Mahoney Asset Management presents A GPS for Your Finances, hosted by their president and CEO, Ken Mahoney. Ken is a Hudson Valley resident and businessman with 27 years of experience in retirement, the markets, investment strategies, and more. He presents this show to help you navigate today's financial landscape, to make it easier for you to understand and to answer your questions. Now, here's the host of A GPS for Your Finances, Ken Mahoney.
Good morning and welcome to GPS for Your Finances with your host here, Ken Mahoney of Mahoney Asset Management. Today's topic, everything you wanted to know about estate and elder law care planning, but we're afraid to ask. And we're not afraid to ask our special guest today, an expert on this matter, John Chaykin of Cantorwitz Goldhammer Grapeman. John, thanks for being with us this morning.
I'm happy to be here, Ken. Thank you.
Yeah, we have a lot of ground to cover, so let's kind of jump right in, and I'm sure you hear this a lot. Why do you need a will in the first place? I mean, if for instance, I have a spouse, and if I pass away, everything goes to her. Like, why do I really need to do all this stuff?
Well, it's a concern for many people that if they pass away, their spouse may remarry, and whatever they have left to her or him will end up with a second husband or wife and not go to the kids. So if you wanted to protect your children, there are things that you can do best through a will.
Right, so protecting the will would be one of them.
Protecting your beneficiaries, yes.
But what is it about a will when you hear the word, you know, we read like half the Americans have a will, that also means half Americans don't have a will, right? So there must be a reason why people don't pick up the phone. I just want to do a will. It usually seems like there's a crisis and then they decide to do a will.
Well, people don't like thinking about the world that doesn't have them in it. But if there is someone who has died and left a mess behind, it's an object lesson and it will wake people up.
I'm sure. And when you say mess, I guess financial, we're talking maybe the courts, some of the things that happen.
Well, it can be any one of a number of different things. If you have a special needs child who is going to inherit substantial money, that result is not really very desirable because it will limit the extent or eliminate the extent to which they can get public assistance. And the money will get sucked up by caregivers and or a nursing home.
Right, so there's a lot of things you put. So now I always say, you know, you think about passing away and there's, you know, people want privacy. Now here, you know, probate's like one of the worst things. Like, oh my gosh, everybody's going to see my stuff, hear about stuff. We, you know, some of these celebrities, like even last year, we heard about Prince's estate. We heard about David Bowie's estate, some of these famous artists. So I guess not having a will means it can go through probate, or what's the...
If one does not have a will, there is a procedure called administration. The problem is that when assets are left in sole name, there's no way to collect them or deal with them without the authority of someone appointed by the court. If it's someone appointed under a will, he's called an executor. If he's appointed without a will, he's called an administrator.
Okay. So basically, the administrator is someone that you don't choose. An executor is someone that you choose. So it's about control and having, let's say, your sibling or your son or daughter take care of these affairs.
Sure. And, you know, frankly, if you don't care what happens after you're gone, you don't need a will.
But most people do, I guess.
But if you care...
I would care, right.
Then you should have one.
So you've been doing this, I think you said, 42 years.
A bit more than that, yes.
Okay, so you've seen them all. You've seen it all.
Oh, I have.
Okay. So share with us a mistake that people make when it comes to this area of the law, the wills and probate and these type of things.
One of the mistakes that I see very frequently is where the head of the family feels that his children should not be treated equally financially and decides that for one reason or another, which he's very comfortable with, one of the children should be cut out of the inheritance. That's an invitation to have that disappointed heir bring on a probate contest and litigate with his siblings.
So let's say you have three children. So instead of a third, a third, a third, it's half-half, and we forget about little Johnny.
And then little Johnny will start filing objections to probate.
Okay. And what, I mean, does Johnny win in these cases usually? Or how does this,
out
I mean,
of
how does
every the courts, yeah, 100 probate objections that are filed, 90 get settled. They don't go to judgment.
Okay.
Of the 10 that go to judgment, 9 lose. It's a rare thing to have a successful will contest through the absolute court system. But the settlement is where the kids make the decision. It's better to pay off little Johnny than to pay the attorneys. Because litigation gets to be very, very expensive.
I never thought of that. Well, if you're just tuning in, you listen to GPS or Your Finances. I'm your host, Ken Mahoney of Mahoney Asset Management. Today, we're tackling the topic, everything you want to know about estate and elder law care planning, but we're afraid to ask. We have an expert with us here, John Chaykin of Kantorowicz, Goldhammer, Grafman. You know, you said sometimes the biggest mistake someone makes is leaving someone out of the will. So in that example, I said a third, a third, a third, but little Johnny, we don't, so we go 50-50, we leave little Johnny out, so to speak. So what do you advise then to make sure that little Johnny doesn't come back, so to speak? So this person that must leave this person out because maybe they're having contact with them or something that happened that you're leaving someone out of the will that just doesn't, you know, seems obvious.
Well, there are multiple alternative strategies. One is to leave Johnny something, but provide that if he contests the will, he loses it. That puts his skin in the game, and it increases his risk of loss if he's unsuccessful. Another option would be to stack as fully as you can the deck so that he cannot win. There are only limited objections he can file anyway. That's not your signature on the will. It's a forgery. Okay, it's not a forgery, but you signed it by mistake. You thought you were signing a contract instead of a will. Okay, you knew what you were doing, but you were forced to do it. Undue influence.
Right.
Okay,
well,
none of those apply, but you didn't have adequate capacity. None of those apply, and you screwed up the procedure.
Okay, so there's a lot going on. Now, I know, because I've worked with you over many years, and I know you videotape a lot of your clients. I mean, so is there an advantage in this case, or in other cases, to videotape when you do a will?
This is primarily done where we have an uneven distribution of the estate. I converse with the client before we actually do the ceremony to establish that he knows where he is, why he's there, what he's about, and that he understands what his property is, who his
family is. And this is videotaped, so if it comes up down the road in court, this person wasn't on Quaaludes or whatever. This person seems a sound mind, coherent on the videotape.
And not being coerced or forced in any way. So
that almost shuts a door in those type of cases.
That's the idea.
Okay.
When the potential objector sees that and understands that it's going to be almost impossible to win, his estimation of the value of his case will drop very, very much.
Right. So you do recommend for your clients then in those type of cases to have videotape?
Yes.
Well, we'll be right back with John Chaykin, who's really helping us understand the laws of estate planning, elder law care planning. We'll be right back after these messages.
Ken Mahoney at Mahoney Asset Management has a new book out, Life on Your Terms, another book in the GPS Guide to Your Retirement series from Ken Mahoney at Mahoney Asset Management. We have given away hundreds and hundreds of his books over the years, and now it's a brand new one called Life on Your Terms, another book in the GPS Guide to Your Retirement series. Get it now before it even gets to Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com. Our listeners will have the first copies. Be among the first 20 callers right now to get a free copy at 844-5-3-7-1-0-1-0-1. First 20 callers get the new book from Ken Mahoney for 2017, Life on Your Terms, another book in the GPS Guide to Your Retirement series, and you can get it for free right now. That number again, 845-371-0101. Life on Your Terms from Ken Mahoney at Mahoney Asset Management.
And welcome back to GPS for Your Finances. I'm Ken Mahoney of Mahoney Asset Management. Today we're tackling everything you want to know about estate and elder law care planning, but we're afraid to ask. And I'm not afraid to ask because we have John Chaykin here as an expert. I'm sure you just heard a phone number. I'm going to give that to you again. I really want you to have this book for free. The first 10 callers right now will get the book for free. Life on Your Terms, a GPS Guide to Retirement. I wrote it from beginning to end to help you understand this crazy financial world that we live in. So it's 371-0101. That's an area code 845-345-371-0101. Leave your name, your number, your address, and we'll be happy to send you the book. So I want to pick up our conversation and, you know, for our listeners to try to understand what documents are really needed. Because you hear, think, well, gee, I need a healthcare proxy. God forbid I got into an accident. Someone could do that. But I'm also hearing I need a will. Do I need a trust? What are the kind of documents that one would need to kind of get through the basics of this?
Well, the basics are the will, a healthcare proxy, a living will, and for many, many people, a durable general power of attorney. I have a aversion to trying to steer clients into doing revocable living trusts. They don't change anything in terms of taxes, liability. What they do is they address certain specific things very, very well. But other than that, they don't do anything for the client. They just help the attorney make money.
So let's go through it. So a living will, that's a document, God forbid, it gets into a car accident. Someone says, comes to the hospital and says, hey, you know what, don't leave Ken on this. No?
In New York, the important document is a healthcare proxy.
Okay.
That is a, it names someone to make healthcare decisions for you when you cannot make them for yourself. You're in a coma, heavily medicated, suffering a temporary or permanent dementia. The living will is like a statement of your attitudes, and it is giving guidance or sometimes comfort to the person you've named it to make decisions for you in your healthcare proxy.
Right. So now let's go through a power of attorney. So that's a document you said that we need as a basic document for this area of estate planning, elder law care planning.
The power of attorney gives someone else the power and authority to handle your affairs other than healthcare. They can buy and sell assets, hire people to provide help, fire people.
Write checks for bills or paper.
Absolutely, okay. Write checks.
But something, some condition would have to happen for it to be a power of attorney, right?
No, actually, the powers of attorney that I insist the clients take are in effect as soon as they are fully signed. A power of attorney that only takes effect when you have lost capacity becomes very difficult to use. How does a bank know whether you have lost your capacity or not? A healthcare proxy only becomes effective when you've lost capacity, but that's important in dealing with the doctors who are treating you. They know if you have capacity or not. But to prove to your bank that you've lost capacity so that the person with authority under the power of attorney can now
and
act
for you.
They
don't want to get involved in that either, I'm sure.
No.
I'm sure.
And even if you have a good letter from your doctor, that speaks of how you are today. Doesn't tell me a thing about how you are tomorrow.
How right you are. Well, if you're just tuning in, you listen to GPS for Your Finances with your host here, Ken Mahoney, Mahoney Asset Management. We're tackling today everything you wanted to know about estate and elder law care planning, but we're afraid to ask. And we have expert John Chaykin with us, and we just kind of reviewed what documents you need. He said a will, living will, power of attorneys. What did I miss there?
Those are the primary documents.
Primary documents, okay.
A power of attorney is, I think, very important. With that and the healthcare proxy, it's like insuring against having a disabling stroke. There are certain things that, in my view, are worse than dying. Being a completely incapacitated but left living by a stroke is, I think, worse.
It is. It is, unfortunately. Now, there's been a lot of law changes in this area. I know this about power of attorneys and so forth. So So if someone hasn't reviewed their will and again, a lot of times, hey, I got married 20-some years ago. We had some kids. Last time I reviewed my will. So I know your listeners can't see this, but he's smiling. It's not funny. But so we hear this a lot, right? You haven't reviewed
Absolutely.
Your will sometimes. So I guess the first question, how often should you review the will? And also, what law changes impact the will that you originally came up with?
I recommend that people should look at their wills every 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
The world changes. Their right. family situation changes.
Right. Deaths, divorces, births, yeah.
Absolutely. Things change. And it makes sense to take a look to see if what you've done still makes sense. And among the types of changes, we've had very, very significant estate tax changes in the last 10 years. And wills that were done before the year 2000 often have provisions that have now very undesirable results.
Wow. That's amazing. So a lot of people, you know, we said half Americans have a will, half Americans do not have a will. So the ones that do have a will may have a will that's not up to date and therefore not be current and really take into account some of the new legislation since they wrote the will.
An example on the estate tax side. It was very typically done to draw wills that would establish a trust that would not be subject to tax in either the decedent's estate or the surviving spouse's estate, and to fund that with an amount equal to the federal estate tax exemption. Well, the exemption has gone from $600,000 to $5.43 million.
Which for most people won't have to pay federal state taxes, because most people's estates are not over $5.5 million or $5.3 million.
And if you have a will that says that the first amount equal to the exemption goes in trust instead of going outright to your surviving spouse, it may be the entire estate ending up in a trust that doesn't serve any purpose, because it doesn't save any taxes.
I mean, that's a good point. Now, other than financial, again, you said financial, of course, but any other changes that have happened in the last, you know, let's say 7-10 years that people, you know, did a will and yet doesn't really make sense now in 2017?
There is not a similar dramatic change in the wills area. The law there changes slowly. But the big change was in 2008-09 when the legislature changed the form of power of attorney. And what was called the short form power of attorney and was a two-page document now typically runs 12 to 20 pages in length.
Now, this is a New York State document.
New York State document. It's still called the short form power, but it's not short at all.
14 pages, not short.
Before 2009, a power of attorney was effective when signed by the principal, the person giving the power. Now it's not. It takes the acceptance by the first person given the power to make it effective. That's another big change.
That's a change. Well, we'll be right back after these messages with the GPS for your finances.
Ken Mahoney of Mahoney Asset Management is giving you a copy of his new book. It's called Life on Your Terms, and it's another in the series of the GPS Guide for Your Retirement books. Be among the first 20 callers right now at this special number, 845-371-0101. Let me repeat, 845-371-0101. You can get this book before anybody else, before it shows up in Barnes & Noble and at Amazon.com. It's available to you right now. It's called Life on Your Terms. It's another in the series of the GPS Guide to Your Retirement series, and it's from Ken Mahoney, and you want a copy of this new book. Be among the first 20 callers right now at 845-371-0101. Ken Mahoney's new book, Life on Your Terms, 845-371-0101 right now.
And welcome back to GPS for Your Finances. I'm your host, Ken Mahoney of Mahoney Asset Management. I'm glad you're joining us this morning. Today's topic, everything you wanted to know about estate and elder law care planning, but we're afraid to ask. We have an expert with us, John Chaykin of Kantorowicz Goldhammer Graveman. Thanks again for being here this morning. We're covering a lot of ground. Also, you probably just heard Mike Bennett talk about Life on Your Terms, a new book that I wrote, and I want to make sure you get it. I'm going to give that phone number again right now, 845-371-0101. The book is free and now sells on Amazon and Barnes & Noble for $17.99. But since you're tuning in this morning, the first 10 calls will get the book for free. 845-371-0101. So one topic I'm sure comes up quite a bit, actually came up in my family also, is the area of elder law, where mom or dad has a stroke. It looks like mom or dad may not come home. They may have to go to long term. And you hear about gifting money out to the kids, you know, so there's a 5-year look back and all this jumbo, mumbo, jumbo. So what should we do? What should a family do? God forbid, mom or dad has a really serious illness, ends up in a long-term facility, gifting and 5-year lookbacks and those things.
Okay. The issue really is, how do you qualify for Medicaid without having to spend every penny of your assets? Medicaid is intended to be the payer of last resort. And the expectation is people will use their own money to pay for their own care until the money is gone. And then to keep the nursing home from throwing you on the street, Medicaid will step in. Well, that is a great intention, but most people don't want the wealth that they've worked for to go to a nursing home.
Right.
So there are a number of different strategies depending on how much we're talking about. Strategies revolve around how to work with the rules that have been put up to prevent people from giving their money away to make themselves artificially poor enough to qualify.
So let's go to an example. Let's say they have $500,000 in assets, you know, $300,000 is a home, another couple hundred thousand in savings or investments and so forth.
When you apply for Medicaid, you have to give 5 years of financial records. They look through to see if you have made any gifts, and if you have, they add them all together, divide by the monthly cost of staying in a nursing home, and that's a number of months that they will deny benefits even after you've met every test to qualify for Medicaid.
Wow, so there's a lot going on there. Right?
So there's a lot going on there. Right. So you have to keep those rules in mind.
And keep good records of these transfers and those type of things.
Because you will have to explain transactions that are more than $3,000. If you have money going out, you'll have to say why.
But aren't we allowed to gift to our children or grandchildren $14,000 a year? Or
you are, but if you have done that, that $14,000 is going to cost you a month of Medicaid benefits.
Because they're going to count that as
part of the look-back. They're going to count that as a gift.
I know many years ago, New York State had a look-back at 3 years. Now it's 5 years. Is there any talk of making it 7 years or anything like that?
Not that I've heard, but the 5 years is pretty well entrenched now. The strategies, I tell my clients who come in to consult on this, that I don't want them to rush to give away their money. They've worked for it. They've earned it. They should enjoy it. And there are strategies that even once they are in a nursing home can save a significant portion, somewhere between 40 and 70% of their assets.
Well, that's quite
can
substantial.
Be saved. And if in the area of a $400,000 estate, the strategies can save the great bulk of it. But when I say you don't need to do anything until you're in the nursing home, that emphasizes how important it is to have a power of attorney in place, because it may be that your agent under the power of attorney has to do those things that will actually save the money for the family.
Right, get the documents from the nursing home, start getting the statements, putting these things together.
And start making the gifts and transfers that will save the money.
Right, at 40 to 70% is huge savings with some planning. Well, I'm glad you're joining us this morning here at GPS for Your Finances. I'm your host, Ken Mahoney of Mahoney Asset Management. We have the estate planning expert, John Chaikin of Kantorowicz Goldhammer Rafman. And we're going through this area now of elder law care planning, which I think there's a lot of myths and misconceptions. Can you kind of share some misconceptions in this area and then kind of what are the real true answers in this area of elder law care?
One of the strategies that used to be very popular, but now I think doesn't make as much sense, would be to take the family home, give it to your children, keeping a legal life estate, the right to stay in it as long as you wish.
Right, you hear that a lot. You hear a lot of transfers of that, from the home equity to the children.
That still gets counted as a transfer if you need to apply for Medicaid within 5 years of the deed being filed. So it may make sense, and it may trap you in a situation where you can't salvage it very easily.
Right.
So it's dangerous as a strategy. It also gives someone else the right to sell your house even though they can't kick you out. You may find that a stranger is your landlord.
Yeesh. Well, I hope that children wouldn't do that, but I guess there is cases out there, right?
There are cases out there. That's one of the things. The presence of money will bring out the best and bring out the worst in people.
Right. Is it the old saying, a penny worth of prevention is worth a pound of cure and all those stuff? But I mean, so in this area of elder law care, what other advice would you give to a listening audience who may have a mom or spouse, you know, or you know, that's in a facility right now and all these bills are coming in, you feel overwhelmed and not sure? Because also, not only not sure what to do, there's also a lot of different opinions, much like if you went to four or five different doctors, they're going to tell you four or five different things. So how do we kind of sort this out?
Well, you need to talk with someone who knows what the rules are and how to deal with them, because each situation is different, and what works very well for one person isn't going to be the right solution for someone else.
Right.
So you should talk with a planner who can help you make the decisions, and then you have to take prompt action. You don't have to take early action.
Okay.
You should be taking prompt action.
Again, and your recommendation, as I understand it, is get the power attorney up front, kind of get out of jail card down the ropes, tuck it away, forget about it. Mom or dad has a crisis, God forbid, pull out the power of attorney, get in front of an attorney, and then start working through some 40 to 70% savings, perhaps, through gifting and other measures.
That's right.
I'm a good student. Did I get that
you
right?
You got that one right. Couldn't have said it better.
Well, thank you so much for being here, John Chaikin of Kantorowicz Goldhammer Grafman, and helping us understand this estate and elder law. chaos at times, right, and be able to simplify and give it to our listeners. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Ken.
And we'll see you next week for GPS for Your Finances.
You've been listening to A GPS for Your Finances with Ken Mahoney, the president and CEO of Mahoney Asset Management. This is a paid commercial program, and the views, opinions, and advice presented are that of the host and guests and do not represent guarantees of results or represent the opinions of the staff and management of Real Country Radio or Pamel Broadcasting. You can listen to previous editions of A GPS for Your Finances on demand by visiting realcountryhv.com. If you'd like to ask a question, email Ken at MahoneyGPS.com, and Ken will answer it on the next edition of A GPS for Your Finances next weekend on Real Country 920 WGHQ, 1260 WBNR, and 1420 WLNA.